Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by Mubi, the streaming online cinema. Go to mubi.com/filmstage for your free 1 month trial. Ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me today, we have Bill Graham.
Woo!
Yeah! We also have, special for this episode, DJ Mecca.
What's up?
Yeah! Still super upset every time that I realize that you're not an actual DJ.
Yeah, what is the basis behind that name?
His Twitter handle.
My middle name is John.
Ah, okay.
So he's Dan J. Mecca. I'm Brian J. Rowan. And you're...
Bill Graham. Don't need to know.
Your mustache McGillicuddy. So we are here today to talk about Ben Affleck's new film, and that is The Accountant, which is out in theaters now. That's pretty much it. That's really the bulk of it. Follow us on Twitter at Film Stage Show. Follow us on Facebook. Search for The Film Stage Show. And email us, podcast@thefilmstage.com. And let me once again remind everyone that you should give us a rating on iTunes, because it's awesome when you do, and we love to get that kind of feedback. It also helps people to find the show. We are brought to you today, as we are every day, by Mubi. Mubi is the streaming online cinema where they specially curate a new film every day to add to their roster of 30 films. You have 30 days to watch, and then that movie disappears. During that time, however, you can download it to your device to watch it on the go. You can stream it to your iPhone, your Apple TV, your PlayStation 3, all over the place. And Mubi has some truly, truly fantastic films. And because it's October, and the only thing anyone can think about in October is Halloween, Mubi is currently doing Horrific Halloween, where they will be curating horror films all month. We mentioned on the roundtable, there are two films on there by Ty West, that is The Innkeepers, and The House of the Devil. I haven't seen The Innkeepers yet, but guys, House of the Devil.
Innkeepers is fun. It's fun.
They're both good. I like House of the Devil.
House of the Devil is... Yeah. Bananas, I think is a good way to put it.
Yes.
I definitely
he tries to kind of do a lot of the same kind of build up, and then boom in The Innkeepers, and I don't think it's quite as effective. I think House of the Devil just has a better build up, has a better premise, has a better kind of setup and execution. But yeah, they're both good.
And you can watch them both now on Mubi. So go to mubi.com/filmstage to get your free 30-day trial and enjoy Mubi for the whole of Horrific October on us. Mubi, we still don't have a tagline. So that's that. We can, without, you know, Chatty Cathy, Michael Snydell, I guess we can just dive right into our review, shall we? That is going to be The Accountant, the new film out in theaters now. This is directed by Gavin O'Connor, written by Bill Dubuque. It stars Ben Affleck, Anna Kendrick, J.K. Simmons, and it's got a couple other fun actors in there that we can talk about as time goes on. Here is the trailer.
You're different. Sooner or later, different scares people.
Yeah.
You think if you don't fight back, then maybe they'll like you, stop picking on you, calling you a freak. Victim or not, make a decision.
Your son is a remarkable young man. It wouldn't surprise me if he has more in common with Einstein, Mozart, and Picasso than he does with us.
That is the trailer for The Accountant. This movie I am super excited to talk about, having just seen it today. I don't even know what to say. Luckily, I always go last on these things, so I don't have to know what to say just yet.
Oh, you didn't go last time.
That wasn't
last time. Yeah, I know.
All right. Whatever. Anyway, let's start off with our guest for today, Dan Mecca. What did you make of The Accountant?
I like The Accountant. I think it's a mess to be sure. But I think one thing that's kind of nice about it is Bill Dubuque, he wrote the screenplay. It's not based on anything. It's an original screenplay and a film that comes from an original idea, which, I'll be biased in saying that alone kind of I went into ready to like, because there's fewer of those every year. Yeah. And then
I agree with that.
I think another thing that I think just stands out just generally is that it's funny. It's a funny movie. I laugh. The whole time. Now, whether I was, sometimes I was laughing with the film, sometimes I was laughing at the film. Like I said before, it's a messy movie. Not everything works. It's trying to do kind of everything. It's silly. But I never didn't enjoy myself for the full runtime. I really watched it. I liked Ben Affleck. It's a very movie star performance. Anna Kendrick's chipper personality is utilized to maximum effect here, and then there's just a great supporting cast. This isn't running the Oscar race of any kind, but I don't think that was ever the intention. And there's some saccharine notes and whatnot, but by and large, I would recommend it to most anybody. It's a little violent here and there, but other than that, I thought it was a good time at the movies. Honestly, I really enjoyed it a lot.
All right, Bill Graham, what did you think?
I thought the build up for the film itself was really good. I think the idea behind it, the idea and kind of the initial nugget and the way the first half kind of unfolds is pretty interesting. I think it kind of falls into genre cliche towards the end, but I think this is a film that. And there's a lot of ideas out there like this where they have really good idea and they don't know how to kind of execute the end. They don't know how to end it. And so they just kind of wrap it up. And I think this kind of falls into that format where for the most part, it's pretty entertaining. It's pretty good. And, even the initial idea is interesting and there's a lot there to kind of mine. I don't think we've ever seen kind of an autistic assassin before. And so this kind of has that kind of feeling to it. I definitely think a lot of the performances are pretty good. Anna Kendrick, I definitely think she's a shining star in this film. She's not in it enough for me. I wish she was in it more integral to the plot than just kind of a linchpin. But I think Ben Affleck is really good in it. He's front and center throughout this entire film, and it really kind of relies on his performance. And I think he does a really good job of kind of being this kind of outsider figure. He does a good job with it. I think a lot of the characterisms and things like that he's going through are pretty interesting. So yeah, for the most part, pretty entertaining. And I think it just falters at the end, but a lot of films do.
Yeah, I enjoyed this film. I had fun in the movies. I'm gonna be upfront about I'm when we get into spoilers, I'm gonna be super confused at a certain point. And the reason because of that is that at a point at around the 40 minutes until the end of this movie, a family walked into the theater with fresh bags of popcorn and sodas and sat in the row directly behind me, so that this family of seven, I was seated dead in the middle of, just in front of, as they were talking very loudly. And when I say a family, I mean a mom and a dad and five small children. And they remained there talking and not really responding to the silent glares to please shut up for a good 10 to 20 minutes during a number of scenes of exposition that I feel like were filling in gaps that I might have had. I couldn't communicate with them that I thought that they were in the wrong theater because they didn't speak English at all.
Oh, Jesus.
Finally, someone from the theater came in and began trying to convince the patriarch of this clan that they were in the wrong theater. It was like a minute long, full-throated, like full volume conversation until they finally took the dad out to like show him the marquee, I assume. And then he came back in and loudly explained to his family that they were all in the wrong theater. And then they all got up and very loudly left the theater, laughing about the misunderstanding. So, with that in mind, there may be some aspects of this movie that I've confused about through no, like,
fault of my own. We'll walk you through them. Yeah, we'll walk you through them.
But even with that, I still enjoyed The Accountant. By that point, I could already tell that, like, even if I did come to understand everything, the number of subplots had become unwieldy to the point of comedy. But, you know, Ben Affleck's performance is good. I enjoyed watching him in this. I thought he's a good character and a good actor to center all this around. I think that a lot of the secondary players are very well cast. Anna Kendrick is fine in her role. There's like a lot of really cool ideas in this movie to the point where I was surprised that it was an original idea, because this definitely seems like one of those things where like I wouldn't be surprised if there was an entire like 20 installment series that you could buy in like a Hudson News in the Airport about The Accountant. Just because there's so many details, but at the same time they're like 100% not fleshed out and not really like dwelt on. But it was still fun, and sometimes you just want to go see a fun action film that's well shot and well acted, and it may go a little nuts when it comes time to bring the narrative home, but that's fine. So overall, I would say I'm a fan of The Accountant, though we're really gonna have to go over some of this in spoilers.
Well, I think that's what you said is kind of what I've been articulating to people when they ask me about it. I mean, I think something that gets lost, and me and Jordan talk about this a lot with a lot of movies these days, is, and I think, you know, we've talked about this on the podcast before as well, is, you know, the enjoyment level of some of these movies. Like, you know, I have yet to see Suicide Squad. Obviously, we saw Batman v Superman and all these kind of bigger movies. A lot of them are superhero properties and all this. And one thing that always aggravates me generally, especially I recently saw X-Men Apocalypse, you know, speaking at that level.
Jesus. Yeah.
There's a lack of enjoyment, right? I mean, and maybe, you know, maybe Civil War, you know, has a little bit of comedy. So, you know, of course, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
there is a general lightness to that brand. But like...
Yeah, the Marvel movies overall.
There's just like a, and not even just, you know, these superhero movies, but generally, you know, even like, you know, Transformers movies, they're like long, bombastic,
yeah,
effects-driven things, and that's all fine, but there's a pronounced lack of human awareness in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie, right, The Accountant, you know, might not be much better in a sensical term than a lot of the movies I just kind of referenced. I mean, it goes off the rails, and Brian, you not understanding it is like not even that surprising. I mean, not that it's a hard movie to understand, but it does go so many different places that totally, if you're distracted for 5 minutes, like you would be like, what's happening? But it's also the type of movie, like you said, where you're like, nah, whatever, you know, and you know, and that it's like it sounds like a backhanded compliment, and it kind of is, but it's nice. It's like, you know, that's the thing. I think if you, it's funny because Bill Dubuque wrote The Judge, right?
Right.
Which is almost like the other side, in my opinion, of this exact thing. I was pretty excited for The Judge when it was about to come out, basically because hey, that movie doesn't get made a lot anymore. That's more like a Netflix show these days. And I just like the idea of like Robert Downey Jr. not in a superhero suit, doing his thing, courtroom drama, And unfortunately, that movie goes is like not unlike this movie, tonally crazy, but is so treacly and sweet and bullshitty that it's kind of hard to really enjoy yourself. And it's also very long. And by the time you get to the end of it, you're like, nah, I'm okay. But this movie kind of, I think, probably because of the action backdrop, at least for me, was enjoyable. You know, and I just think it just speaks to maybe the, how low the bar is for adult entertainment right now.
Yeah.
But it's nice. It's like we had Girl on the Train, which I was all right with, and this movie, which I'm all right with, and Jack Reacher next week. And you're kind of like,
excited for Jack Reacher.
Yeah, and you're like, this is October's nice. It's
if you liked the first Jack Reacher, I think that this is a movie for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It does feel like almost like a throwback, because it's just like, you know, yeah, there's a lot of guns, but other than that, it's not too crazy. Like, it's a pretty simple standalone story that is attended by like six other stories that are happening at the same time that connect in various different ways. And yeah, there's something almost like comforting about that. That you're not sitting there thinking like, ooh, I don't know anything about like the mythology of this person in the comics or anything like that. You know, you can just kind of allow the movie to play itself out. And it's, I was never bored. I will say that the marketing was deeply misleading. Because the marketing to me made it seem like this was going to be kind of a dark character study. And it totally isn't. It's just a crazy balls to the wall like action film that keeps trying to sort of like justify why Ben Affleck's character is so damn good at everything. And again, that leads to some of the confusion, but I like it. It was fine. I quite enjoyed like, this is, sitting down I and think- watching this movie.
Yeah, and I kept thinking, I mean, this is the type of movie if you know, Adam Wingard made this with Dan Stevens and it was a little bit more violent, you know, it's getting prime screen time at Fantastic Fest and like more better and better reviews. And like, and I understand like, there's Gavin O'Connor has a sensitive side and, you know, sort of as a writer, and that comes through at the end and we can talk about that. And that obviously sets it apart and probably downgrades a little bit, but you know, it feels like that type of movie.
Yeah, it's a movie that's so sincere about its own intent as a movie that's one of the reasons it feels like a throwback. Because like you said, you know, most of the in vogue independent directors, if they were to make something like this, they would add a twist in somewhere and things would be really weird. But no, this one's just content to be an R-rated, adult-facing, weird sort of like a little bit of mixture of everything. It's like a gumbo, I guess, in that way. It's or I guess a jambalaya is what I meant. I always mix up gumbo and jambalaya. What an awkward thing to have to bring up right now. But
food.
Yeah,
you can't avoid food.
I gotta get food, my right baby. Food metaphor.
Food, baby.
I will say that like it's, and we can talk about it more in spoilers, of course, but you gotta be prepared for, like, the level of flashback that this movie has.
Yeah.
Because it begins...
Yeah, this feels like an era, like an episode or an entire season of Arrow kind of condensed into one movie.
I don't watch Arrow. Yeah, I assume they have a lot of flashbacks.
Yes, there's a lot of flashbacks in Arrow. Yeah.
It plays a little bit like three Lost episodes playing concurrently, if that makes sense. Because you got... It opens a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then it has a scene that like begins in the middle and ends like 90% of the way through that. So it has no real introduction and then no real ending. And then it jumps forward and then it jumps backwards again and continues to jump backwards. But sometimes it only jumps backwards a little bit. And it's crazy. I was a little, there was not audacity in the way that you talk about when like a new bold talent is trying something nuts,
Sure.
But audacity in the way of just like, here, just this is how I'm doing this. And you're like, wow, you're really going for that. It was a little bit disconcerting. And then you keep meeting new people. And I don't know, it's a hard movie to explain. But the funny thing is, I feel like this is the type of movie where even though it sounds like it's a knot of narrative, I feel like my parents could sit down and watch this and get it.
Yeah, I think uninterrupted, I think more than likely it would kind of reveal itself a little bit easier. It's unfortunate that you had that situation kind of crop up in your screening. So, because like Mecca was saying, this isn't a particularly dense piece of filmmaking, but it's definitely something where if you are distracted for 5 minutes at a key part, like the threads just unravel. You know, it's like whoa, what happened? Oh, okay.
I'll tell you when it happened in spoilers.
Sure, we'll get into that.
We'll get it. Is there anything else to say? I mean,
I'm not used to
talking about movies like this.
I think the action has to be kind of talked about a little bit more. And Mecca mentioned it in his kind of first kind of thoughts on it. But yeah, I think the action in the first half of the film. You know, I mean, we've seen the Bourne films, we've seen, you know, the John Wicks, and we've seen a lot of films with hand-to-hand combat and things like that. But this film in particular has kind of, especially there's a sequence on a farm that has a lot of sense of humor to it, that has a lot of kind of, you don't know, there's a lot of high stakes that could go in any direction at any time during that sequence, and it pulls it off with pretty good precision, and it still has some humor. They never lose that sense of that kind of sly humor, and I think it's one of those films that kind of, like, you know, even John Wick has some of that humor as well, and there's certain film and certain filmmakers that just kind of understand having kind of a human touch to them that's more than just, oh, it's got to be drama. It can be kind of dark, and it can also be have some lighthearted humor, because they are crazy situations that they're throwing these normal human beings into the middle of. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, let's have fun with it.
I will say, what were you going to say?
No. I was just going to say, to Bill's point, one of the things I like about Ben Affleck sometimes as an actor is he's got that old Hollywood thing of winking to the camera a little bit, you know, like a little Clark Gable-y kind of thing.
I was going to say a little Cary Grant-ish.
Yeah, where it's like, hey, look, we're making a movie.
Yeah,
you know
what
I mean? Like, we're, you know, and obviously, once again, the sentimentality betrays that a little bit. That can't be denied.
Yeah.
But like on that farm scene, when he waves at the end, right? I mean, that is funny. That is a funny thing that happens, right?
I was going to say, I got a huge laugh in this movie just because John Bernthal shows up.
Oh, he's great.
And yeah, we've seen him in like his professional mode. And then like you catch him at an airport, like in between jobs.
And he's wearing those fucking shoes. Oh my god.
And he has like weird pants that like don't have an ankle, and he's got like a windbreaker of some kind on, and like,
and he's got the headphones around his neck.
Yeah. I was like, this is 100% a guy who just wanted to be comfortable on an airplane and didn't give a shit how he looked. It was incredible. I was so happy with that.
And like Affleck brings that same type of thing to like The Town even. I recently rewatched that movie. And I think people forget what that movie, I mean, that's a, you know, a better piece of entertainment than The Accountant, I would say. But
sure.
But I mean, there are funny moments between Ben Affleck and Rebecca Hall and Ben Affleck and Jeremy Renner in that film that make the proceedings lighter, right, than just, you know, that's something I really do think American movies like really lack, you know. And I say American movies because foreign movies are masterful with like that type of tonal.
Oh, yeah, like on the round table, we were talking about how South Korean films just like, they don't give a shit what's going on. They're like, I think we could use a comedy beat here.
Yeah.
In fact, when we talk about The Handmaiden next week.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God. There's so many points where I'm just going to have to like stop and just talk about like a crazy thing that would happen that would never happen in an American film.
Sure. Yeah.
I will say that the movie has a built-in comedy mechanism just through Affleck's, they don't really ever label what he is, but he seems to appear to be like
high functioning
autistic.
Yeah.
And like his lack of social cues and everything, that could be one thing, but like just his utter deadpan no matter like what's happening, and his like his inability, you know, in a movie like this, given what's happening, a lot of guys would go for like unhinged rage and like, you know, this is it, I'm gonna take them all down from the inside, and he's just like, nope, okay, well, time to, I gotta go do this, I'll be back.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a very, I can't think of the word I want to say. There's a virtue in that, in a movie like this, that allows you to take it a little less seriously and therefore have more fun with it, because it's not. Go ahead.
I love that it's literally the presentation of Ben Affleck's Matt Damon jealousy, because he gets to play Goodwill Hunting and Jason Bourne in the same movie. And I just love that so much, because that's, I don't know. So the original script of Good Will Hunting, me and Connor, who writes for the Film Stage a little bit, we were talking about this. The original screenplay for Good Will Hunting, like the one that sold, was, you know how in Good Will Hunting he takes that meeting at like the NSA or whatever they call it,
yeah,
in the movie.
Yeah.
And so basically, I'm going to talk generally here because I'm sure I'm getting some things wrong. He's like recruited by them and it becomes like a conspiracy thriller.
What?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can look it up and read about it. Like I said, I might be like 10% wrong on this, but basically that's kind of what happens. It goes from like the movie that you have, right, that exists, yeah, and then it becomes
underdog kind of, hey, I'm rooting for this guy.
Like a paranoia thriller type thing. And then when they were
into like 3 Days of the Condor.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, I've never obviously read this original thing, but that's what I read about it. And then when the movie sold and they started developing it, they kind of adjusted it to make it more of a personal tale.
That is a huge and I just, fucking difference.
And I just love the idea that Ben Affleck always had that script like in a drawer, and someone was like, "Hey man, you're Batman now. What do you want to do?" And he's like, "Well, I've always kind of wanted to really make the Good Will Hunting that never got made." And they're like, "Just make, you know, I mean, that is not remotely true." Yeah, but yeah, when I watch this movie, I'm just like, "I hope that's true."
Well, I mean, I saw a trailer for Live by Night, before this movie, and it was kind of interesting to see like obvious sort of awardsy season Ben Affleck. And then earlier this year, we got dark and gritty Ben Affleck. And I like this Ben Affleck. I like this guy who's right here.
You don't like the guy that's growling under the cowl?
No. Not so much. I love this Ben Affleck, though. I think I'm going to love Live by Night, too, though. But I just, you know, it's good to see him, like, take a break and just have some fun. And not have to be growling under a cowl.
That trailer for that movie, holy shit, like everything happens in that trailer.
Live
it's
by
just
night?
Like, yeah.
Yeah, but I have no idea like in what order or what the hell is going on.
I know, but I have this theory that all filmmakers need to give the trailer companies 25%, like the first 25% of the film, and then say, here, sell the film. That way, no matter what they show, it can't be in like the second half of the film, because you give them a completed film and they're just going to go bananas. And
I mean, this movie pretty much has that same sort of idea. As far as like the marketing, it seems like it gives everything away. But as a Roman Catholic, an Irish Catholic, actually. This is the more correct term. There's a point in the Live by Night trailer where some guy with an Irish accent growls like, you know, you're always wanting someone to punish you for your sins. Well, here I am. And I'm like, yeah, pretty much. All right, I'm sold on this.
Okay.
My problem with the Live by Night trailer is that hat. I got a problem with that hat he's wearing.
You don't like that hat?
We'll see. He doesn't look good and it looks a little silly.
Yeah, it does look a little silly.
Maybe it'll be a lot of modern leading men cannot pull off a fedora. It's just a tough look.
It's a tough look.
But that's like a floppy floor. That's not even like a cool.
Yeah, it is.
Like,
it is kind of
like I'm chilling out in my like I'm on the coast fedora.
It's like they go to the coast in that movie.
It's hilarious because y'all can't see this, but Dan Mecca's image for his Skype is him in a fedora.
It's a bad photo. It's a bad photo.
Is that a fedora or is that a trilby?
I don't know.
Who's to say?
It's a hat.
It's a narrow brim too, which is just even worse. You gotta get those wide brim fedoras, like they had in The Road to Perdition with the rain falling off of them. Oh.
Yeah, Tom Hanks looked good in a fedora.
Oh fuck yeah, he did. So we're treading water here. Let's go to spoilers, shall we?
Sure.
Okay. So spoilers for The Accountant.
Can I ask a quick question just to jump us off?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
How long into the movie until you were like their brothers?
Oh God, I don't remember exactly how long, but I definitely called it.
When
I feel like it's so crazy telegraphed because that kid, the other son, is always there. That's gotta happen.
Well, the opening is kind of trying to set up that like, okay, you know he's doing this alone, right? So you're like, okay, why is he alone at this moment? And it's kind of trying to set up that, okay, he's doing it because he's angry because they killed his brother, right? And when I realized that it was his brother was when he got the jump on him, like when they were both like walking down the street. All of a sudden he turns around and I was like, yeah, they're setting this guy up to be his equal, and the reason they're doing that is because he's his brother. I was just like, I got this.
One of the things that I liked about this movie was how much it felt like everyone was there on purpose. It's a very classic kind of way to construct a film. And so when they create little mysteries like that, you know that you have a set amount of people to plug in certain places. And so for the longest time, I was like, oh, they're using a robotic British woman's voice for his, like, handler.
Mm-hmm.
I bet that's his brother.
I was thinking that for a little bit.
Yeah. And then, I don't remember precisely when, but it was, like, I think it was right after the flashback with the children, like, fist fighting in Kabul or whatever. Mm-hmm. Where I was like, oh, no, you know what? I know who that is. But yeah, so that's... I guess, you know, spoiler number one, John Bernthal is Ben Affleck's brother.
I love Bernthal's introduction in this film, too.
That
sequence in the car is like this is just everything that we've seen him kind of build up as a character, because he's got kind of a persona by this point.
He's got the violence in that scene. He's got like the violence of Punisher with the kind of like weird braggadocio of his character
Shane.
From The Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, I was thinking Shane in Walking Dead, but
oh,
okay.
No. Like he in that scene he was so much like, you know, tell her to come over, let her watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's just so much in this movie. Like Jeffrey Tambor is a guy that he meets in prison. Who teaches him?
Yeah, the timeline of that was kind of confusing. Me and my friend were talking about it afterwards, and it was basically like, okay, so the timeline is that he was a veteran.
Oh yeah, I had a lot of problems with this.
So he went to war, right? He was overseas.
Yeah. Did he
got?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. There's this whole thing where how would J.K. Simmons not know who this guy would be?
Yeah, but he got captured, right, because I guess he was a defector, and he got captured because he was doing, like, the accounting for, I guess, like, the Taliban stand-in in this film, right? And so he was captured, sent away to prison, and then he just randomly met Jeffrey Tambor, who decided to divulge all of the information that he was storing in his head to this guy that was... You know, like,
okay, wait,
obviously,
wait.
Like, you know, autistic and could remember all these details.
Wait, I thought, okay, so.
Yeah. Yeah, this is confusing.
So, towards the end of J.K. Simmons's 10-minute sit down and explain some shit scene, towards the end of that, enter Hispanic family. They didn't leave until well after the shootout at the house was done. So that's So that's why I feel like I missed a lot. Because J.K. Simmons opens his story with him in the hallway, you know, and being asked if he was a good father.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he like jumps back again.
Well,
right, because he's like, oh, you know, well, the guy in the hallway. He stays.
No, he doesn't jump back.
No, he stays there. He just kind of goes forward through his own timeline, and basically what he's saying is that he was kind of ready to leave this department,
right?
And it's not strictly. I don't know why his department doesn't say CIA on it if he works for the CIA. That was kind of confusing.
No, he's not. He's a part of the Treasury Department, isn't he?
Okay.
He's the director. He's like the Treasury Director.
Yeah. Okay.
When we meet him, but then he's in that hallway. So when he's in that hallway, he's like a shitty Treasury agent.
Right.
Okay. He's an agent
to work with like the FBI.
Yeah.
Sure. And then he gets his life spared. Okay. Right. Then the robotic voice woman starts giving him tips.
Right. But after he talks about the accountant sparing his life, doesn't he then jump back to explain why the accountant killed all those guys anyway?
Yeah, no, he explains that those were the guys that killed Jeffrey Tambor.
But my question is, we see that J.K. Simmons was talking to Jeffrey Tambor. Like that, he's the new handler that Jeffrey Tambor was like, I don't really like this new handler.
Jeffrey Tambor was going to rat out those other guys.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
see, the thing that confused me,
was Affleck transferred from a military prison to Jeffrey Tambor's prison?
The thing that confused me, so this is the way that he explains it is like, so that all happens, and then he starts getting the tips from the robotic woman, right, voice.
Right.
And then he builds his career back up right as he was going to retire, and then he gets promoted because he's like crushing all these cases because of the accountant, right, is like doing work for these bad people, but then also like getting them caught in doing so. Great. Okay, fine. That's fun. And then it's like, then they like explain the accountant part of it, where basically because his father was military, he joined the military, and then he was recruited by basically like a shadow ops scenario that his father was like somehow loosely tied to. And J.K. Simmons kept saying like they know who the father is.
But they don't know who his son.
But they didn't know who the other. Yeah, they didn't know who the other person was. And then their mother who left dies. And the reason Ben Affleck goes to prison is because they get into a fight.
Ah,
right. Okay, that's what I thought.
Right, and then so he goes to a regular prison. Right, and then he escapes.
Goes to Leavenworth first.
Right, and then gets transferred. Yeah. And then he escapes. But what I never understood about this. Okay, so fine, he escapes and he's gone and he becomes the accountant. But J.K. Simmons is telling all this. So J.K. Simmons has always known this. he has a throwaway line where she goes, can't you just look up his file? And he's like, all that information is redacted. And I was like, what are you talking about? That information is redacted. If he was arrested, like it's like really silly. Both of his names are fake. It's like, can you get arrested with a fake name and no one is going to realize that? They're going to run.
They called him Soldier One on the police report.
Yeah, it's like, is that how this happens? Happened?
His dad is killed at the funeral.
Yeah,
and then he's arrested and brought to Fort Leavenworth. But why is he transferred to a civilian prison to become friends with Jeffrey Tambor?
Because, Brian, because.
Okay. All right. As long as there's not a reason.
I can't remember. Okay. I don't know if they
missed it. I
was worried that I missed it. But then, okay, so that's crazy. And
it's just so silly. It's like so like what – it's just one of those – if you've written screenplays at all, you know exactly what a scene like that is like. Like that feels like – the type of scene you write when you have a great idea and the account's a pretty good idea, and then you have to have a thing where you're like, oh wait, how am I gonna get from here to here? And so if you're lucky enough to have J.K. Simmons as the guy who's gonna like sling it, you know, I mean, that's fine, but
he's sitting on a chair with a fedora over his face, just telling the story.
Right, he's got the fedora in this movie. Yeah,
he does.
Yeah.
I was just confused because, like, again, we open on the scene of feet running down a thing and walking past dead people, and now we finally find out that he was the guy who was running and got the gun to the back of his head. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, oh, why was he killing all those people in the story that I just told you? Well, for that, we got to jump back. And it was just the construction plus the Hispanic family threw me off. And then when they were leaving and made the most noise is when the accountant and his brother are fighting and they finally sort of stopped and are like hashing out their shit. Mm-hmm. So the brother was pissed off because he took his dad to the funeral and not him,
or that he went at all to the funeral because, like, the mom
part
left.
Of it. Yeah, part of it was that he went at all because
did Ben Affleck give a reason why he went?
That's his mom, dude. That's his mom. You know.
Yeah.
And then they sort of parted on good terms.
Yeah.
And they just capped John Lithgow because fuck that guy.
Oh, can I quickly talk about Lithgow? So. Yeah. Other than that,
hold on, okay. Real quick. Did he kill his own sister?
I don't think Lithgow killed the sister, right?
Yeah,
I think
he got his sister killed.
Yeah. Well, no, so this
that
is my
crazy.
Point. This is my thing with Lithgow. So, like, the motivations of that character is so insane to me because, you know, you think it's the one guy when Bernthal's introduced and that's kind of interesting. And then, you know, probably pretty not too long after that, you're like, oh, must be Gene Smart. By the way, awesome to see Gene Smart getting some work. That's nice. And then, you know, obviously it has to be Lithgow, and his little speech at the end is such a load of crap, like in regards to what he's done. You know what I mean? I understand I understand, you know, that speech has been made by 1,000 villains, like, the good I do outweighs the bad, blah blah blah, but I just would have loved if Bernthal was like, you killed your sister, man, you know, like,
yeah,
it was just
crazy
so
thing is
insane
that
to me.
His initial bad was just a little bit of money floating.
Yeah,
but, like, yeah, you know, it's not like his technology,
he goes from like 6 to midnight, he's just like, yeah, I gotta kill my sister, I guess.
He's like, oh, okay. The plot that Ben Affleck uncovers is that the money in this place has been moving to shell corporations and then back in, so that they're basically showing, like, double revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to go public. So they want to make it look like a really extraordinary company. The crazy thing is that their technology works.
Yeah.
So it's not even like he's doing it and he's just going to defraud people.
Yeah.
He's like got operable tech to
and,
millions of people.
Yeah, and the funniest thing and this comes up like twice, and they never really fully answer it like to any reasonable amount is, you know, Ben Affleck, I think, even says, like, why did you hire me? And it's like, yeah, why did you hire him? Like, it's just so funny to me. Like, my favorite scene in the whole movie is right after he figures it out and Anna Kendrick comes in and they get giddy over the numbers.
Oh, that was cute.
That to me was just, I was like, this is the accounting in this movie is actually the best part of the accounting.
I was expecting more accounting. Like, is that a weird thing?
I was expecting less accounting. I
was expecting
a
shit ton of accounting.
Okay. So,
to be like the thing that broke everything open. Like,
okay,
I gotta look at the accounts again.
It's a win if there's any accounting in my book.
So my favorite sequence is right after that when he comes back in and they're erasing everything, and you realize like he's being let go. And it's like, okay, you did a good job, all right, but this guy like ended up committing, you know, theoretically committing suicide because, you know, he was being found out and whatever. And it's like the film doesn't take that moment and just like, oh, okay, well, and let's wash our hands of it. No, they give like this moment to Ben Affleck where he's like, no, like I wasn't done, and he's super distraught about it. And then they kind of show him being distraught. And they show him going back to his place and he can't quite park his truck sideways into the place and, you know, everything like that. And they show him kind of unravel in that way. And it never really – I don't think it ever actually pays off in any way because it doesn't have any effect on the film itself. But it's just one of those –
I feel like, because they jump from, like, we're letting him go to we're going to murder him way too quickly.
Sure.
He doesn't, it's not like we see him, like, failing at other tasks, because seemingly the next day, two large men are dispatched to murder him.
Well, they're dispatched to murder him at while he's shooting, what are those things? Cantaloupes?
Yeah, he was shooting cantaloupes with what appeared to be a Barrett 50 caliber rifle.
I like how that guy's like, oh, I wouldn't be able to make that shot in like a million years. And it's like, did you see the weapon that he was firing? Because I'm pretty sure that helps quite a bit.
Yeah. I guess there's a bunch of things in this movie where, like, it's very clear that they're trying to make it make sense, even though it never will. Like, the killers who come to kill him at the farmer's house say something along the lines of, like, you know, you think we could just, like, walk into his house and shoot him in the head, and then they're like, here, call him in. Like, I don't know why they were there. I don't know why they had to do it there. I mean, like, were they afraid of his countermeasures, or?
I mean, it seemed to me like they were just using them for bait, and so they had to find bait, and that was the easiest bait that they could find.
But they knew he was there.
Yeah, get a high-powered rifle and then just shoot him while he's shooting his cantaloupes.
No one guesses that he's going to be this lethal.
Yeah.
Guys, there's no accounting for the economy.
These numbers don't add up.
It doesn't add up. It's not the sum of all of its parts.
I would say that this movie is the greater than the sum of its parts, because some of its parts are like firm negatives. Like, I'm still not sure.
Would you say that it's the sum of all fears? Ben Affleck drop.
Oh, snap. God damn it.
There goes all my goodwill hunting.
What I was going to say is I'm still not 100% sure either why J.K. Simmons wants to find him. Because when the woman is like, why are you telling me all this? He's like, because when that phone rings after I leave, I want you to answer it.
Her name is Cynthia Adai Robinson. I actually liked her in this. She's great in this. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she's that's kind the of thing, like,
an up and comer, and I like she did a pretty good job with like a pretty thankless role. Like, half her role is to repeat what J.K. Simmons says, and the audience basically knows it already.
Yeah,
you know, where he's like, "It was his father," and you're like, "Yeah."
She clicks Cynthia. A lot. Thank you. Mice in this movie, we get a lot of loving close-ups of her fingers stroking a trackpad.
It made me so mad she didn't know who Lewis Carroll was. It's like, come on, man. It's Lewis Carroll. Looking up Lewis Carroll right now?
I wasn't 100% aware that Lewis Carroll was a mathematician.
No, but I didn't know that. Someone says Lou Carroll, and he's got a history of like aliases of. I mean, when your first thing be like, oh, Lewis Carroll? I don't know. It just made me laugh.
And I thought Christian Wolf was just like a hilarious biblical thing. No, he's a mathematician. But yeah, it's funny because like in this spoiler section I've done nothing but like poke holes and like ask what the hell was happening, but I'm still on board. And it's weird how much a good movie with good actors, with solid action, and an emotional core story that I can follow fairly easily makes up for all the other stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm just as confused now as I was like during certain parts of Batman v Superman, and I'm 100% on board with this movie. And that movie was execrable.
Well, the emotional tie up at the end where it's the, you know, the girl from the home and mm-hmm. that, you know, she's the voice. And I mean, that is all, I mean, that is, you know, manipulative and terrible. I mean, there's no other way to say it. I mean, but it's like,
I love that this couple that run across this random grown ass woman are like, yeah, cool, I'll leave my autistic son with you.
This woman who is like freaking out on the bed, but it's like, oh, she's fine.
It's like, and then
they have that the husband in that couple be a computer expert so he can put a bow on it.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, that's a water cool.
It was so funny. I was like, why do we need to know? Like, we can just assume that computer is dope. Like, what? Yeah. Like, there's no reason for this guy who's like,
you could barely backdoor the Pentagon with that rig.
Yeah. He's like, oh, I happen to be in IT, and let me explain to you and the audience, you out there, exactly what that computer can do. And it's like, we're good. We're good. Why don't we just hit the credits? Why don't we just hit those credits?
Yeah. We said a lot about like the action and stuff like that, and I think especially the farm scene is yeah. really kind of stands out, and then the other sequences when he invades her apartment to kind of save her, I love that sequence as well. Fights back, and she doesn't fight back in a way that like, oh, she knows like karate or she's taken like self-defense classes. No, she's just like, here's this heavy object, I'm gonna hit you in the head with it because yeah. you're choking.
And it's it helps that Ben Affleck does his own stunts, you know, or can, or you know, is big enough that yeah. he can do some of his own stunts, because they're not cutting around a lot of stuff, at least it doesn't appear they are.
Sure. You know, this is, I think, this is very, you know, classic, with, like Steadicam, non-shaky cam action, that's, you know, and it's weird how good that is. I would say this is like certain scenes felt like John Wick Light, but mm-hmm. John Wick is so good that like John Wick Light is still very good.
Yeah, John Wick is just super flashy about yeah. everything that it's doing, so it comes off as a very different experience. But I have to say, the final sequence, that final showdown, was a little bit groan-worthy until he actually got inside the house. I think all the sequence when he's set up outside of the house, and I was just yeah. like, oh, geez.
No, inside
like,
the house.
Like, here's the compound sequence where he's got to come in, and I'm just like, okay, come on, fast forward. Like, they have way too many people in that house. I was just like,
a shit ton of people.
God, because he kills like 7 or 8 people outside, and then he gets inside and he's got to go through 5 or 6 more people, and you're just
and
like,
John Lithgow
what?
Does the common supervillain thing where he's like, I don't want to go to a secure compound. I want to stay in my house with its glorious picture windows.
Yeah.
And then like the ending of this movie is also weird because. His brother and the accountant and his brother are like having a crazy fist fight, and then like a jam sesh where they're just like hashing out their problems, and John Lithgow's like staring at his computer like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, I really want to be inside his head when he's hearing all of this, because yeah, it's clear that he can hear everything.
Yeah,
right.
He walks in, he's like, what the shit is happening?
Yeah. Are y'all
and then
brothers?
He just gets shot.
Is that what's going on? Yeah. Yeah.
And then I will say that, like, I liked the little relationship building between Ben Affleck and Anna Kendrick. I think it was nice that it never really, like, turned romantic or anything. I do think it's weird how she just kind of gets, like, shunted off until the end.
Yeah, she's, like I said, she's kind of a linchpin character. She's the reason that he kind of goes after this company and everything like that.
Yeah. I don't think that there was ever a need for them to like try to kill either of them. That was an overreaction.
To try and kill the accountant and her?
Yeah.
It's classic Lithgow. That's so Lithgow.
That's so Lithgow. That's
so Lithgow.
But yeah, so that's the accountant.
Well, I thought it was kind of interesting that he ends up giving her this priceless Jackson Pollock, and it's like, okay, so I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe he knew that she was an art appreciator, I guess, but.
Well, she calls it out. She calls it out in the.
I mean, she recognizes it, but like a Pollock is pretty easy to recognize. Even like I've seen like 3 Pollocks
don't
in
they
my
have that, they
life,
have that,
and I can recognize them.
But don't they have that? They have that nice conversation in her apartment or at the hotel, which actually was a nice kind of lovely scene where he kind of explains his how he deals with how he lives his life and everything.
Yeah.
But doesn't she kind of talk about that? That she's in art? I feel like she mentions that.
Yeah,
in that
she mentioned she wanted to go to the Art Institute of Chicago.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
so it's,
she's
talking about a prompt
and
dress.
He knows that she's not going to try to fence it. She just wants
I mean, she can't.
She wants to
she
look at it and say, wow.
That's the thing. Like, she can't fence it, because if she tried to, like, put it on the – like, if she tried to go legal way, they would just be like, hey, that was stolen.
But she's not even thinking about it, dude. She's
she just wants the
and
thing,
when friends come in, they can be like, is that a Pollock? And she'll be like, no, it's just paint.
No, she'll be like, no, it's a forgery.
It's a
fake. But yeah, it kind of sucks because it puts her in a weird position where it's just like she's the old. I don't know. I think it's fine.
Well, it's your birthday, but like, and I know that I should give you some slack, but I refuse to.
Happy birthday, Bill.
Happy birthday, Bill. What was I going to say? Like, and Pollock is like the best for like if you got to have a stolen painting in your house,
mm-hmm.
because like. No one would recognize it.
Yeah, yeah. People, if you didn't know art, you would just be like, "What the fuck
is
that?"
If I had a friend who had like a Rothko hanging on their wall, I would just be like, "Are you ever going to finish painting that wall?" Well, you've got this swatch painted. Like, have you not done the light tests yet?
So my thing was I really appreciated the fact that he not only gave her the Pollock, but he gave her the Pollock with the dog playing. Playing poker sequence like scrolled on top of it, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, no, it's not just here's this sentimental thing that I'm gonna give you, but it's also like, hey, remember that great conversation we had when we first met? And it's like,
yeah,
oh, okay.
I wonder if they'll ever find each other.
Yeah,
and I hope he fixes his relationship with his brother.
I was really hoping, because I don't know if y'all heard it, but I heard a very distinct motorcycle noise while I was watching the trailer, like being led through that mountain range or whatever. And I was hoping that it was going to be his brother on the motorcycle. And it was just really strange to me. I don't know if y'all heard that same motorcycle noise.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, it was a very distinct like motorcycle noise. And I was like, oh, when's he going to like pull up behind the trailer? And there never was a motorcycle. I was just like, why did ADR just leave that in? I don't know.
Are they hoping for like an accountant too? Because they set it up. Like,
all I want, I don't want the accountant too. I want like the teacher. You know, I want the
Shaolin monk
doctor.
Okay.
Just a bunch of really. I was about to say the doctor's too much. Like the teacher is fine. The plumber.
The plumber. Oh God, I would love the plumber. Let's. Let's try to crack that after this podcast.
Okay, I am down for that.
It's called Bill Dubuque. We'll have a quick combo with him and get a story credit. Let's get it rocking.
He's a colorblind plumber, and that allows him to do something for some reason.
But guys, we got to start from the end and then work our way back. Because otherwise, we're just going to end up in this same kind of film.
So I will say also, like, his father is the fucking worst.
He's not
a good dad.
No. I totally understand his kind of motivation, because I think he has a very key moment where he basically says, look, I can surround my son in a bubble and basically put him through all the special classes and put him through all the special teaching and things like that. Or I can just realize that won't set him up for success in our own world, and maybe my way will turn him into a lethal assassin it's kind of like, all right, you know, I totally understand his kind of reasoning behind it, because it's like, if I just surround my son in a bubble, then that's all he's ever going to have.
Right.
That's all he's ever going to kind of achieve in his life having someone watch over him. And
I mean, this is, I inherently, I agree with that in a way, because like, you know me, I'm not down for trigger warnings. I think people that want to create safe spaces are like woefully underprepared for what reality is. But like, there's a difference between that and then like, I don't want my son to grow up in a bubble where he has like sensory deprivation. I want him to be able to exist in the world. Cool. Maybe you could split the difference and do a little bit of both to help him learn adjustment skills so he can do that later. And then you're having him beat up a bunch of French teenagers in the rain under an underpass. Like,
yeah, you know.
That's quite a leap.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, I felt like it was like, I felt that final sequence. I was really feeling like a Xavier's school for special children kind of vibe.
I literally was too. I was like, oh man, what are they training all these other fucking kids for?
Exactly. I was like, oh man, he's going to open the door and like some kid's going to be floating a spoon. And I'm like, yes. All right, here we go.
I think we can agree. There's no accounting for the accountant's dad.
Oh my God.
Second time. Oh, second time.
Yeah, my feelings on his dad are divided.
Yeah. Well, yeah, probably. Nice.
All right. Nice. I would definitely. I would watch a sequel to this movie.
Yeah.
I would want more Affleck. I would want him and Bernthal on the same team.
Oh, Jesus, yes.
I'd want Anna Kendrick to get pulled back in somehow.
I just want to see more.
There's too much to account for.
Yes.
I just want to see Bernthal just do more drop-ins on guys like in their cars. Just you know, having a conversation with them like, hey, look, you got to
Bernthal could be called the parking attendant.
Bill, you know how... That's a good one. You know, Bill, how they have like comedians in cars getting coffee and like carpool karaoke?
Uh-huh,
what if we pitched John Bernthal on like John Bernthal threatening people in parking lots?
or the title is corporate executives getting threatened in parking lots and Bernthal is there the guy. I like that. Wow, there's a lot of right material here.
I was about to say, while we develop the three different things that we've come up with, let's call it a day.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's. I don't even know. What a weird movie. Anyway, let's talk about Mubi real quick. At Mubi.com, that's MUBI.com. You can stream the best of foreign, independent, and all around awesome cinema. You can download it to your phones. And you have 30 days to watch every film that they add, one film each day, perfectly curated and selected for your viewing pleasure. Currently, they are doing Horrific October, so get on that, because I cannot wait to see the type of stuff that these curators pick up to scare the living hell out of us. You can go and get your free trial at mubi.com/filmstage, and that's about that. So let's tell the fine folks at home where we can be found. Starting with our special guest, Dan Mecca.
Hey, you can find me always at thefilmstage.com, and you can find me... you can find me at twitter.com, at DJMECCA.
All right, and Bill Graham.
You can find me doing the final numbers on Twitter, at CableBFG. You can also find me... not wearing a fedora on the film stage and freshfiction.tv.
All right. And you can find me trying to account for my particular taste in movies on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan. You can find me there on Letterboxd under that same name. Follow the Film Stage show on Twitter at Film Stage Show and on Facebook. Search for the Film Stage Show. That is all for today, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much, and join us next week.